Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a really pivotal case that sits right at the intersection of securities law and, well, your future professional lives, SEC v. H. Thomas Fenn. This decision from the Ninth Circuit in 1996 has some serious implications for understanding the SEC's power and the responsibilities that come with being a lawyer advising companies in the securities realm.
That's right. Think of this as like a foundational case for anyone heading into corporate or securities law. It grapples with a core question. Can lawyers be held accountable for essentially, you know, enabling their clients to break securities laws?
Exactly.
And if so, where do we draw that line? What does accountable even look like here?
Right. And that's why this deep dive is especially crucial for you as law students. It's not just about memorizing case names and dates. It's about understanding the real-world consequences of the advice you'll be giving, the documents you might be helping prepare.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to break down the facts, the legal reasoning behind the court's decision, and why Fenn continues to resonate today. Our mission is really to equip you with a solid understanding of this landmark case.
Okay, so let's set the stage with the backstory. This all centers on CTI Technical, Inc., or CTI, and their initial public offering, their IPO, back in June 1987. Now, while every company hopes for a successful IPO, CTI's debut was anything but smooth. It pretty quickly attracted the scrutiny of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
It sounds like a bit of a cautionary tale, yeah. The SEC's investigation revealed a number of issues with that IPO. We're talking about unregistered securities, a failure to properly disclose the significant role of a promoter named Edwin Bud Wheeler.
Ah, Wheeler.
Yeah, he seemed to be a key player behind the scenes, but wasn't really fully in the spotlight, you know? And even allegations of attempts to artificially inflate the stock price once it started trading. Just a real cocktail of potential securities violations.
Absolutely. And with those kinds of red flags popping up, the SEC naturally launched an investigation into CTI's IPO in early 1988. This is where H. Thomas Fenn, the attorney at the heart of our discussion, comes into the picture.
Right.
He was retained to represent not only CTI itself, but also Wheeler and other related parties as the SEC began to, well, dig deeper.
And during his representation, it became pretty apparent that Fenn was privy to some significant problems facing CTI. Like, for example, the company had failed to file its mandatory quarterly reports with the SEC.
Which is a big deal.
A huge deal. And perhaps even more critically, the Food and Drug Administration had essentially barred the sale of CTI's main product.
Hmm.
For a publicly traded company, especially a new one, those are major red lights flashing right now.
Oh, indeed. And this is where Fenn's actions become central to the story. He wasn't just a passive observer of these unfolding issues. He actually took on the responsibility of reviewing and editing CTI's quarterly reports, the Form 10-Qs, that were filed later in 1988.
And those documents are so important because they provide ongoing transparency to investors about a company's financial health and its operational status.
Exactly.
But here's the crux of the legal battle. Despite Fenn's clear awareness of these earlier problems with the IPO and the significant ongoing operational hurdles, the Form 10-Q reports he helped prepare contain some really critical omissions.
Mm-hmm. What kind of omissions?
Well, they didn't accurately portray the extent of Wheeler's continued influence and control over CTI, and perhaps more importantly, they failed to disclose the potential legal and financial liabilities that could arise from those earlier securities law violations related to the IPO.
Ah, okay. So to understand why this led to legal trouble for Fenn himself, we need to delve into the legal principles at play, specifically the concept of aiding and abetting liability under securities law.
Right.
Now, it's important to remember that some years after these events with CTI, Congress passed the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995, often called the PSLRA.
Mm-hmm, the PSLRA.
And this legislation included a really significant provision, Section 104, which explicitly authorized the SEC to pursue injunctive actions against individuals who knowingly help others violate certain securities laws.
Okay, so the PSLRA gave the SEC a clear legal tool to go after not just the companies or individuals who directly commit securities fraud, but also the so-called secondary actors, those who facilitate the wrongdoing.
Precisely.
And in CTI's case, what were the specific securities laws they were found to have violated through those misleading Form 10-Qs?
Well, CTI was found to have violated Sections 10B and 15D of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, along with related regulations. Specifically, Rule 10B-5, which is the big one, broadly prohibiting fraud and misrepresentations in connection with buying or selling securities.
Right, the catch-all.
And Rule 12B-20, which requires that SEC filings include not just the specifically mandated info, but also any additional information needed to ensure that the required statements aren't misleading.
Gotcha.
So those omissions in the Form 10-Qs about Wheeler's ongoing control and the potential liabilities from the IPO, that was the core of these primary violations by CTI.
So this raises a really important question. How does the legal system actually determine if someone has aided and abetted these primary violations? It can't just be about, you know, nearby when something bad happens, right? There has to be a more concrete standard.
Absolutely. The courts have established a very specific three-part test for aiding and abetting liability in securities law. First, there must have been an independent primary violation committed by another party. So here, CTI's materially false and misleading filings.
Okay, step one.
Second, the alleged aider and abettor Fenn in our scenario must have had actual knowledge of this primary violation and be aware that their own actions were contributing to it. That knowledge piece is key.
Actual knowledge. Got it.
And third, they must have provided what's termed substantial assistance in the commission of that primary violation.
Okay, so let's apply this framework to Fenn's situation. The first element seems pretty clear-cut. CTI's misstatements and omissions in those Form 10-Qs regarding Wheeler's influence and the potential legal baggage from the IPO. That definitely constitutes a primary violation of securities law.
That's right. The court in the Fenn case didn't really dispute that CTI had committed primary violations. The main point of contention was whether Fenn himself met the other two prongs, knowledge and substantial assistance.
Right, the tricky parts.
Exactly. On the issue of Fenn's knowledge, the court looked at several key factors. They specifically emphasized his professional expertise as a securities lawyer.
Okay.
And his clear awareness of both the FDA ban on CTI's primary product and the prior securities issues that had plagued the company's IPO. In fact, the court stated quite directly, Fenn's knowledge of the primary violations was plainly established in this case.
Wow.
Plainly established. That's pretty definitive language from the court. So his legal background and the specific information he possessed were critical in establishing that he knew about CTI's violations.
Now, what about that third part of the test, substantial assistance? What specific actions did Fenn take that the court considered to have crossed that line? It wasn't just giving advice, right?
No, it went beyond that. The court focused on his direct involvement in the process of creating and disseminating those misleading disclosure documents. He wasn't just offering general legal advice from, you know, afar.
Right.
He actively advised on the content of the Form 10-Qs. He reviewed and edited them. And ultimately, he facilitated their submission to the SEC.
Okay.
The court reasoned that this level of involvement went far beyond simply providing routine legal services or exercising general oversight. Instead, his actions directly and materially helped CTI continue its violations by presenting a false picture to the investing public.
So this case really solidifies some important legal principles in this area then. One of the key takeaways seems to be the SEC's clear authority, reinforced by Section 104 of the PSLRA, to seek injunctive relief against those who aid and abet securities law violations.
Absolutely.
And as the excerpt from our material states pretty unequivocally, Section 104 of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995 expressly authorizes the SEC to bring injunctive actions against those who aid and abet violations of certain securities laws. No ambiguity there.
Precisely. It really cemented the SEC's ability to pursue these types of cases. Another crucial principle that the Fenn decision underscores is the scienter requirement.
Scienter, the mental state, right?
Yes, exactly. For someone to be held liable for aiding and abetting, they must have had actual knowledge of the primary violation and their role in furthering it. Mere negligence or a simple oversight isn't enough. There needs to be a level of intent or at least a reckless disregard for the truth.
Okay, so not just an accident. And the case also strongly highlights the importance of materiality when it comes to disclosure obligations under securities law, doesn't it?
Yep.
The fact that information about Wheeler's ongoing control and the potential liabilities from the IPO were considered significant enough that their omission made the disclosures misleading. That's a really key point for understanding what info companies and their lawyers need to be carefully considering when prepping SEC filings.
Exactly. These weren't minor details or, you know, trivial oversights. They were fundamental to an investor's ability to make informed decisions about CTI's business and the inherent risks involved. And this brings us to the real significance of the Fenn case and the important lessons it holds for attorneys, particularly those working in securities law.
Yeah, the takeaways.
This ruling sent a very clear and powerful message.
And that message seems to be that as securities law practitioners, you have a really significant responsibility to be proactive in guiding your clients on what needs to be disclosed and to actively work to ensure compliance. As one of our sources aptly put it, effective regulation depends fundamentally on securities lawyers such as Fenn properly advising their clients. It's not just about mechanically filling out forms. It's about ensuring the accuracy and completeness of the information being given to investors.
Absolutely. The Fenn case makes it abundantly clear that attorneys cannot simply accept at face value everything their clients tell them. There's a necessary level of due diligence and independent professional judgment that's required.
Right. You can't just be a stenographer.
Exactly. The court essentially stated securities regulation is premised on open disclosure, and it is therefore incumbent upon practitioners like Fenn to be highly familiar with the disclosure requirements and to insist that their clients comply with them. You can't just turn a blind eye to potential problems or red flags.
And the potential consequence for failing to uphold these professional responsibilities, as Fenn himself experienced, is that the SEC can seek significant injunctive relief.
Which isn't minor.
No, it's not necessarily a criminal prosecution, but a court order that can severely restrict an attorney's future activities within the securities industry. That can obviously have a profound impact on their career and reputation. It serves as a very serious deterrent.
That's right. And it's worth noting that Fenn did try to defend himself against these charges on several legal grounds, all of which were ultimately unsuccessful in the Ninth Circuit.
What were some of those arguments?
Well, for instance, he attempted to rely on the Central Bank of Denver Supreme Court case, arguing that because there isn't a private right of action for aiding and abetting securities fraud, the SEC shouldn't have the authority to bring injunctive actions for aiding and abetting either.
Interesting argument.
Yeah, but the court firmly rejected that, pointing directly to the specific authorization granted to the SEC by Section 104 of the PSLRA. Congress explicitly gave them that power.
Okay, so that didn't fly. He also raised a Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination argument, didn't he? Suggesting the disclosure requirements forced him to reveal incriminating info.
He did. That argument didn't hold up either. The court reasoned that the disclosure requirements are fundamentally directed at the company, CTI, to ensure transparency for the investing public.
Not at him personally.
Right. Rather than being specifically targeted at compelling testimony from Fenn himself, it was seen as part of a broader regulatory framework to protect the markets. And finally, Fenn attempted to argue that he had acted in good faith, essentially claiming he didn't have the requisite knowledge or intent to aid and abet.
I didn't know defense.
Kind of. But as we discussed earlier with the scienter requirement, the court found that given his professional expertise, his access to information about CTI's significant problems, and the obvious red flags.
Yeah, the FEA ban, the prior issues.
He acted with at least knowledge of the primary violations. This effectively negated his good faith defense in the eyes of the court.
So the court wasn't buying it.
No. They weren't persuaded that he was simply an innocent bystander caught in the crossfire. His active role in advising on and facilitating the disclosure process, combined with his awareness of the underlying material issues, led the court straight to its conclusion of aiding and abetting liability.
So, as we bring this deep dive to a close, the SEC V.H. Thomas Fenn case really stands as a critical landmark. It reminds us of the absolutely vital gatekeeper role that attorneys play in the complex world of securities regulation. When legal professionals are advising companies on their disclosures, they're not just scribes. They carry a significant ethical and legal obligation to ensure that the information being presented is accurate, complete, and not misleading. Failing to diligently uphold those responsibilities, well, it can lead to significant legal consequences.
And for you as future members of the legal profession, especially if you're considering a career in corporate or securities law, understanding the principles laid out in this case is truly foundational.
Yeah.
It vividly illustrates the inherent tensions that can sometimes arise when representing clients in heavily regulated industries. It underscores the critical importance of always balancing your duty of zealous advocacy for your client with a clear, unwavering understanding of your own professional and legal obligations under the law.
It really prompts you to think about the ever-evolving legal landscape, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. With increasing scrutiny on, well, all sorts of actors in the financial world, how might cases like Fenn, even though it was decided, you know, nearly three decades ago, continue to shape the future of legal practice? Mm. And that often delicate balance between being a strong advocate for your client and ensuring you are not, even inadvertently, facilitating potential misconduct.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It's certainly a crucial consideration as you move forward in your legal career, something to really mull over.